Hello, welcome and thank you for joining us and listening to our podcast, The God Beyond the Bible. Our podcast is released weekly each Friday. The content of each episode is based on the questions and curiosities we all have about God and the Bible. Many of our topics are considered taboo in the minds of the mainstream church. You will find our discussions to be, I think, refreshing and often far from traditional. But we don't just skirt around these complex issues, but confront them head on, and not in the way you're used to hearing them discussed on typical Christian talk shows. I'm Alan Rowland, creator and host of The God Beyond the Bible. As of the launch of this podcast, I've been a pastor for more than 35 years. My co-host is my daughter, Trayson, and our engineer co-producer is my daughter, Tabitha. Our mission is to encourage our audience, along with us, to open our minds to the reality that God is simply too big to be fully explored or experienced by the reading and studying of a single ancient work. In short, the Bible's not the sum of God, and to think this is to limit what He has done, is doing, and what He will do in our future. So with introductions made, thank you for listening, and let's dive into the topic of the day. Okay, and welcome back, listeners, to God Beyond the Bible. I say welcome back. Maybe this is your first time to listen. You know, I always encourage folks to go back and listen to our very first episode. That's kind of a good thing to do. You kind of get your feet on the ground of what we're going, because sometimes we just keep referring back to that a lot, and so it's good to listen.
And you can kind of start along with us, because it took us a few episodes to get lined out where we wanted to be.
Hopefully we're getting better at this. I just want to say this is, of course, God Beyond the Bible, a podcast by seekers and for seekers, and I'm not going to do like Tabby's husband. He looked at that at a distance first. He said, "By suckers for suckers." I think you did it on purpose myself. Probably. I said, and that says seekers there. listeners, don't quit. I want to say thanks to the repeat listeners. You know, hey, there's Kurt. He's a good listener. And by the way, he helped us out on episode 6.
Yes, I had a little bit of trouble with the embedding on the website, and Kirk sent me a message and let me know that we were having a problem, and I was able to get it fixed before a lot of people missed the episode that morning.
Yeah, any shout outs to anybody else?
Sure, to Nancy and Marlene in Arkansas. They listen, and we're building a real base of listeners.
That's really great. Every week. And remember, we're 4 or 5 episodes ahead when we record these. So if we don't get to you, you may have to listen 4 or 5 episodes before you hear your name.
Right.
Now, there's a new episode released each Friday morning about 7 a.m. Central Standard Time. And thanks for your likes and your comments. And even those whose comments don't always agree with the topic or the point of view that we may seem to be trying to present. We're trying to be objective, but sometimes it does. And I know we're opinionated like everyone else.
Right.
Just don't be ugly and demeaning, because those comments are just going to be ignored. Our mission is not to be drawn into some spiraling debate that the person whose opinion is right is the one who shouts the loudest and slings the most well-worded, thinly disguised insult. And, you know, if that's what you're into, there's plenty of other places you can go.
Yes.
I mean, I'm just saying. I'm not being ugly.
No.
Say, love to have you, love you, but we're not going to get drawn into just a ugly.
In my
name
generation,
calling.
We call that trolling.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay. Our mission, however controversial it may seem, is to speak to those folks who are not satisfied with rehearsed answer to the hard spiritual questions. We admit that there are many questions that we may have that will never be answered this side of eternity, someday meeting God.
And that brings us into our episode for this week. Last week, our topic was on the decline of the modern organized church. And we determined that there is a general consensus among most folks that the modern church has been experiencing a decline of interest in participation that's been spanning the last 50 to 75 years, and that it's really accelerated in the last 2 decades. And here at God Beyond the Bible, we are convinced that believers will always exist, and that the church as an organism in the heart of the believer will always exist. But the church as an organization has evolved.
Or that it has evolved into, right?
Yes, it has evolved into and is headed for a revolutionary change or a slow decline into extinction. Maybe a better way of saying it is, it might be that the way we connect as believers and the way we find fulfillment in our spiritual needs is changing. And those changes will ultimately affect the way the church functions and the image we have of it in the future. So So episode 11 is devoted to the changes, the progress, and the evolution of the church in the next 10, 20, or 30 years.
And beyond.
In short, the evolving church, or maybe the metamorphosis of the church.
Yeah, maybe that's what it should be, the metamorphosis of the church.
So here in segment one, our question is going to be, what patterns in worship and meeting of like-minded believers do we see right now that might indicate the direction the church is going?
And you know, the church is always evolving. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's when man tries to get in there and we're going to stop it from changing. Yes. That's when we start having a problem. That's when we have to have a reformation or something like that. It seems prudent at this point to discuss, first of all, and thanks, Trayson, by the way, because Trayson had to do, I've been having some throat. She read that for me, and I appreciate it. Did a good job. It seems prudent at this point to discuss, first of all, the impact of becoming a mobile, that becoming a mobile society has had on the local church in the past 50 years. Now, I'm part of the very end of a society of people who had modern transportation. I don't know if that makes sense, but the idea of church was still fairly limited to the local church near you of the denomination you best identified with. And maybe I should say I'm the end of that. I'm not the end of the transportation. So I'm the end of kind of the end of that generation that you just didn't think about going to church a long ways away. Example, I grew up on the same 17-mile stretch of highway my children and grandchildren still live on today. My grandparents lived on this stretch. I think there are 7 churches of various denominations, all which still exist today, and we're here then. However, we attended the Baptist church, and when I say attended, it was the church we attended when we went. Even though we attended church occasionally, it was after my sister and I were both licensed drivers. I think I was 14, maybe she was 16 or 17, that we actually became active. And I mean, I'm going to be just kind of honest. We got to drive there, so we went. And my mom was a believer. My dad seemed to reject the idea. However, my grandmother on my mom's side lived near us, and she was a believer and a strong spiritual influence in my life, but did not insist on taking us with her to church services. My point of all this is that we were limited in terms of mobility, and the generation just before us was, well, horse and buggy for the most part, so the local church thrived for that reason alone. Let me add that, like most other churches of that era, the membership consisted then of a pastor and a couple of deacons, and the rest of the congregation were pretty well women. In that era of limited mobility, if you had a problem with the church you were attending, you just didn't go, or you attended another local church, maybe of another denomination. And seldom was driving 10 miles to another church of like faith an option. The point is, one of the largest impacts I've seen on the local church is our mobility as a society. It is not unusual for folks to drive 25 miles or more to the place they assemble. So during those 4 decades that I've been active, I've observed people leaving the bigger churches for the remote small congregation that they felt better suited, you know, they felt it better suited their spiritual needs, and vice versa. There's people that leave the little congregations and go to the big church.
And I really think that's great that we're in a place where you can seek out where you are spiritually fed. Because the same service for one person might be completely unfulfilling for another.
Well, sure. And so, for that era of the 70s and 80s, the single biggest change for the church was its ability to attract people to their congregation from a larger geographical area, which was good for some and maybe not so good for others. The truth really is that most of the people doing the transitioning was that of believers. Just now, I'm not saying people weren't getting saved, but most of the moving around was being done by people moving from church to church, and in a sort of way, it opened the door for people to seek out something they felt was missing or unfulfilled in their lives. In reality, every church, no matter what their denominational differences were, operated basically the same. They were part of some larger organization, a fellowship of a larger organization that they supported, and a certain few people held positions of leadership and authority in the structure of the church. So in short, people in the rural areas could attend the bigger church in town, and the people in town could venture out and attend the smaller country church, but all in all, they all did business pretty well the same. It just came down to the matter of liking the people, the pastor, the message, the way they believed. We could now, though, at this point, seek out other churches geographically, but the face of the church as a whole wasn't really changed that much by the mobility of the believers.
It wasn't, and I think that seems to be a common thing I find in people still today who don't attend church at all, is, Well, every church is basically the same. Everywhere I've gone, I've dealt with the same issues.
Well, and it is, because they're kind of all structured, just like inside the denominational name, and they're all structured kind of the same. And we talked about in the last lesson.
The pastor came at him.
Yeah, we talked about in the last podcast how that... I even lost my train of thought right there after we said that. But our last podcast was about how they're structured after business and government, and that was what we talked about in that last podcast. So that brought us into this one. Anything else in this first segment about the mobility of the believer and the impact it's had on the local church? Okay, then that'll close out segment two or segment one, and we'll be ready to transition right into segment two. I'll get that right here.
Everybody, welcome back to our podcast by Seekers and for Seekers. We are God Beyond the Bible, and today we're discussing what the church may look like in the not so distant future. In segment one, we discussed the impact that mobility has had on the modern church, that is, the ability to attend the church of your choice over a larger geographical area due to the improvement of roads and automobiles and other transportation.
And our topic for segment two is megachurches and home churches and their impact on the evolution of the modern organized church.
I think we kind of talked about the home church a little in the last episode. And so that really I was noticing when I wrote that in there, I didn't speak much about the home church, but all of these different things. People are opting for different things, but we're really spending most of this segment on the megachurch. And we're going to talk about the megachurches. What are they and where did they begin? The megachurch is something that's been around for a while, but has become quite a phenomenon in the past two decades. These may be defined as churches whose facilities, this is my definition, whose facilities are designed to accommodate from roughly 1,000 to over 10,000 members and attendees. I find it surprising when somebody says, oh, we attend a small church, and I think we have 400 or 500. And
I know. Yeah.
That just, it blows my mind, is have pastoring churches with 30, you know, for years. So one must ask, what is the attraction? What are these churches of various denominations doing to attract so many? And while there's a myriad of reasons one might attend a megachurch, there are a few obvious benefits. Churches of this size have the assets and the organization to cater, if you will, to the diverse circumstances of a particular that a particular individual may be experiencing at a different time of life. For example, singles, divorced singles, single parents, young married, just to name a few. I mean, some churches have just a group, a small fragment group for, you know,
for almost any situation you're in. And guys, this is something that I think is really important in churches, is this need for fellowship, because socialization and fellowship is something that we do not get in our day-to-day lives. Social media is not socialization.
Well,
school is not socialization. You need time to speak with people who are in the same lifeboat that you are.
Well, let's be honest, even at a mega church or any church meeting, a lot of times, just as far as congregating in a building, listening to a sermon, going through all the things that you go through, sing three songs, say a prayer, take up an offering. I mean, I'm not making fun. I'm just saying. And then the pastor gets up, speaks 30 minutes. We shake hands, go out the door, go home, visit maybe a little. That's really not fellowship.
No, it's not.
Well, talking about the mega churches and how they cater to, you know, whatever your life experience may be at the time, many find it easier to congregate when they know they will encounter others with the same life experiences as themselves. In other words, they probably don't feel judged by people who haven't shared similar life experiences.
And guys, this is something I've dealt with my husband, who didn't go to church until he and I went together. You know, he had always felt judged by people who had been in church their entire life because he was in his 40s and had only attended a handful here and there. And that non-judgmental spirit is really important everywhere. Yes.
Most small community churches don't have the facility or the volunteers, or let's face it, the budget for the amenity to be able to just cater to everyone. Talking about the mega church, often they're more family-oriented activities. Most mega churches offer classes for every age of children. Often even a nursery where volunteers and sometimes paid staff will attend small children while the parents take part in the service. And, you know, that's a big thing to some people. Yeah. And this is attractive not only to the parents, but to the children alike, even the ones that are above the nursery age, but they're able to attend a separate service that's oriented toward their particular age group. And a perk, once again, that the small local church just can't compete with.
And I've been to smaller churches, too, who almost make parents with small children feel uncomfortable for having their kids there. Because little kids are going to talk. They're going to make noise. And if you don't have a set nursery, or if the parent doesn't want to send them into a nursery, I think they should feel comfortable.
Sometimes if the parent's new at the church experience, sometimes they get embarrassed.
Yes.
I mean, too.
And
so,
that should never be something you should be embarrassed for. Kids are kids.
We're just here presenting the options. We're not here knocking any organization. The emphasis on the socializing of the mega church also is important. Single people have more opportunity to meet a larger number of other singles. Young people are involved in activities that bring them together with a large group of people their age, allowing them to interact and develop friendships outside their normal circle of people at home and school. Another attraction is the smaller church has great difficulty in trying to compete. And we use the word compete here, and it seems a little inappropriate, but this is exactly what it has become. Mm-hmm. A competition for an ever-shrinking pool of possible people to draw from. These mega church advantages in junction with our mobile society alone has spelled the end for many small local congregations already. And very likely will signal the end for many, many more in the decades. I'm being realistic.
Yes.
In the decades to come. And last but not least, some folks enjoy the anonymity of the mega church, and I'm not pointing this out shaming to anyone who attends for this reason. Let's face it, a lot of people, even believers, are very private people. The mega church offers the ability to attend forever as a guest with no strings attached. Whereas if attending a smaller congregation, one might fall under the pressure of joining as a member or serving in some capacity with which the person is just not comfortable doing. Again, in a small congregation where everyone knows everyone else by name, a person who is private and wishes to remain anonymous just has a lot of difficulty in that. And let's not overlook the convenience of the megachurch. Many, if not most, offer multiple services on Sundays and some other days of the week. Often you may attend services as early as 7 or 8 a.m. and have the rest of the day either to work or enjoy with the family. And this means a lot to a number of people in various situations and various walks of life. And again, this is a luxury most small congregations can't order.
Can you imagine as a pastor being able to giving your sermon 3 or 4 times throughout a day? That would be exhausting.
I guess it probably would. And I guess basically they do the same. I've not really, I've pastored. I've preached even when I wasn't pastoring. I was speaking somewhere. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure how that works. Is it the same?
And the one that I'm most familiar with was one my husband attended back several years ago. And it would be like the 7 o'clock service would be the main pastor. And then the 9 o'clock service would be the associate pastor.
Okay.
And then they would rotate back and forth throughout the services of the day.
But now let's just be honest. I can see where that would be a convenience. If you were a person that Sunday's the only day you had off work.
Yes.
And you wanted to attend worship, you felt the need to do that, to attend and fellowship and worship, you could go at 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning, be out by 8 o'clock, be out an hour later,
mm-hmm.
go spend the day with the family, and.
Because sometimes Sunday's the only day you have that you don't have work obligations,
right.
or...
Absolutely.
Or
so.
If you have kids, family obligations,
yes.
kids play sports, that takes up a lot of weekends.
And then Sunday, they don't do it on Sunday.
Right.
And, Sunday you've got a chance to, well...
Relax.
Is it a day of rest?
Yeah.
Sometimes it's not. And this brings us to the end of segment 2. We'll be right back with segment 3.
Welcome back, everybody, to our podcast, God Beyond the Bible, a podcast made by seekers and for seekers. In today's episode, which is episode 11, and it's part 2 of a 2-part series on the changes involving the modern church, in the first segment, we explored the impact that us becoming a mobile and transitional society has had on the modern church, especially the small local congregations.
And we discussed the rise and the advantages of the megachurch in segment 2. which is partly a product of our mobile society and how it's impacted the small local congregation with limited resources and a shrinking pool of likely members. Now, in segment 3, we're going to discuss the introduction of the internet and the free exchange of information and the impact it's already had and may have in the near future on the face of the declining church as we know it now.
And that brings us to just ask the question, are people turning to the internet, to YouTube, to podcasts, and et cetera, as an alternative to physical congregational services?
I know that I turn to it in addition.
And, I mean, there's always been, when I was, even I would visit people as a young pastor and go around and they'd say, well, I watch so-and-so every Sunday morning on the media. And you know, that was so frowned on that was your alternative. I'm from that era.
Right.
I'm not saying that I do, but I'm just saying you thought, well, you know, you need to be. So are they turning that? Or maybe a more well-phrased question would be, does the church as we know it face the same destiny as the brick-and-mortar stores are facing in the light of online shopping? I mean, the short answer may be a resounding yes. We have to face that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even the megachurch may not be able to survive this competitor. Ironically, many of the assemblies and congregations that had their meteoric rise to megahood, those are all my words, accomplished it by broadcasting their services on radio and television. But the arrival of the internet, especially YouTube and the podcast providers, has taken that advantage away from the megachurch with their mega TV budget, and it made it available to what? Basically anyone that has a message to share.
Even the church that we attend, you know, our small congregation, we have an online presence.
Yeah, we have over 100 lessons online, 100 messages online. And I don't think that anybody would mind. I'm going ahead and mention it. Skyland Ministries.
Yes.
All one word. Skyland Ministries.
And you can find it on Facebook or on SoundCloud.
I'll give a little punch there. But we reach what? We're in 40, 50 countries.
Sure.
And we've been doing this for a couple of years and got a couple of hundred lessons and just get great feedback. So, you know, we're going to embrace or we're going to, you snooze, you lose, right?
Yes.
So what are the advantages of online church services, for lack of better words, over the brick-and-mortar buildings in the congregations? Of course, I think the biggest selling point or attraction is convenience, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
A person can remain spiritually active without being at a certain place at a certain time. And let's just point to, isn't this a lot of times the stickling problem that we've structured it up like it's almost like a school? It's like you have to be here. If you're going to participate, you get your stuff together and you be here at this time and be in the door and take your seat. And we've always made it like school, haven't we?
We have. And, you know, that, I
we're talking
that's
about the brick and mortar
we
church.
We have
here.
To kind of remove that stigma as we do with a lot of things.
Right.
But it is
I had a conversation with a woman recently who told me, the reason that she doesn't attend church is because she works 6 days a week. And she said, Sunday's my day off. And when I wake up on Sunday, the last thing I want to do is have to wake up early, hurry up and get dressed,
take
and
a
get
shower,
to church.
Put my makeup on, do all
and
the things.
And how can you really blame
done.
Her?
Yeah. Well, I can't.
Well, there's people. Well, we'll discuss that. But I think the biggest selling point, as I said, is convenience. A person can remain spiritually active without being, we're talking about now online services online, you know, getting your spiritual food, your spirituality, feeding it from online. You don't have to be at a certain place at a certain time. And, well, let's be honest, without leaving the comfort of your own home or even your pajamas, for that matter, spoken who's one who's recording this in a pair of pajamas today, every other institution of life has adjusted to meet the busy schedule of our modern society, except the local church. Do you think that's a fair statement?
Yes.
Yeah. And I had never really thought about it, but, you know, even banks, you have mobile banking just right there. I mean, there are so many things.
I can deposit a check at midnight by just taking a picture of it.
Even you were talking about, we make church like school. Even school, you can just do it from home.
Online. Mm-hmm. We've had it drilled into us for decades. I have that attending services 1, 2, or preferably 3 times per week is the equivalent of putting God first in your life. No matter how frustrating or taxing it might be to our whole family and the harmony of our family. I'm just being honest here. I'm saying the things the church member will not say to the pastor.
Yes.
The pastor's saying it. The things that the church member will not say to the pastor. The reality is many small congregations have already reduced their weekly services to two or even one Sunday morning service per week. And some of that's because the lack of enthusiasm, the lack of attendance in the late night services. And then sometimes that's due to the congregations are getting older. Well, I can't drive at night. I mean,
as someone who's from the younger generation, who I will admit, I don't attend our Sunday night services.
I was going to bring that up. But no,
for my work schedule, my husband and I work a half a day on Saturdays. So Sunday after church starts my weekend. That's my time to rest and recoup. And we do our podcast and a few other things. But if I want to have time just at home to relax, it starts on Sunday afternoon.
Tracy comes in and kicks off her church shoes, and she says, whoa, this feels so good. This is the longest possible time I'll have before I have to be in church again. Okay, let's stop that silly stuff. That's not what we're here for, but we were supposed to laugh about it. Listen, folks, times are changing.
Yes.
Might as well get used to it. Another advantage of the online church service might actually be a plus on every level. The individual may revisit the message or lesson multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
We don't really think. I mean, how many people do you? I'm going to be honest with you. I've preached the same message. I've taught the same lesson to the same congregation, and I don't think they get caught it.
Is that because you ask me on Monday what you preached about Sunday, and I'm going,
My kids, it used to be a thing we'd drive back and forth on the way from church. Did you guys listen to the lesson today? Yes, Daddy. What do you preach on? Sin?
Yeah.
You just can't say enough about that. That's just one thing you can't say. Got that from the old Andy Griffith show. That's what they used to say. Sin? I thought that was just a good, safe answer.
But well, I'm one of those people who I listen to my online sermons and things like that. And I do listen to them again and again. And I have those that when I'm going through a certain situation that, oh, I'm going to go look up this person's lesson on this. Because
sure.
It always helps.
And the online service may offer a daily inspirational lesson that can be listened to on the way to work, during the lunch break. I know folks that do this. Mm-hmm. Honestly speaking, the truth is that actually may be an increase of spiritual exposure for many who even attend services regularly but don't have or take time for daily devotion and meditation.
We're busy people in our mobile society. You know, we're constantly, like Tabby said, if you have kids, you have sports, you have school, you have all of these things that tax your time. Sometimes the only real free time that you have for a sermon or for a church service is when you're driving to work in your car or you're on your way home sitting in traffic and you can, for lack of a better word, I know you don't actually tune in anymore, but you can tune into an episode of something and listen.
And as a pastor, let me tell you, I meet people that attend church just occasionally, and they come and attend our services, and it's not as, you know, we wouldn't call it regular as far as someone that goes every Sunday, but, and then I can see they're a little sheepish, and they always start wanting to feel like they ought to offer me an excuse of why they, and I hate that as much as they hate that feeling. I hate that feeling because
I don't think there's a one of us who not at some point in our lives felt the obligation to be at church rather than the want to.
And when it becomes an obligation, I get nothing.
Well,
out
the spirituality's gone.
It is.
The spirituality's gone. And if this, I mean, I know it's like, hey, you know, preacher, you're disassembling the very structure that, but I'm not really. Talking about things that, the reality of things. Mm-hmm. Now, the traditionalists may argue at this point, but what are those people going to do when it comes to sickness and death in the family? Now, as far as sickness and our reaching out and contacting and praying for those who are ill, I know just as our little congregation family does, many already have social media prayer groups that are far more interactive and quicker to react than the old traditional phone call or wait for the announcement at the regular service. And Joe's funeral might have been last week.
And they give people the ability to, on the social media chat groups, like I said with our church, you can share the information you're comfortable sharing and people will pray and you don't feel like you have to share more than you're comfortable
with.
That's it.
Right.
You can even say it's anonymous or that, you know, unspoken yes. request. And we do that a lot. As a pastor who has conducted hundreds about the funeral thing, because that's always been the argument. That was my argument when people say, I watched so-and-so. I say, well, I hope Jimmy Swaggart will come and preach your funeral and all that. But the thought does cross right, your mind, yeah, you know. So as a pastor who has conducted hundreds of funeral services, they too are evolving. Many are choosing memorials over funerals, and I think that's a good thing. And the memorials themselves are often arranged and officiated by family and friends. Mm-hmm. A combination of videos and music with inspirational testimonials by friends, family, and guests. Now, remember our statistic last time. For the 80% that believe in God, there's only about, sorry about hitting my microphone, for the 80% that believe in God, there's only about 20% of people that actually are affiliated with the church. Mm-hmm. Maybe less than that, 15. So the rest of these people have folks that die, and you know, I try to step in the gap there, but you know, we're becoming to where the funeral thing is not just, well, you better get a preacher.
It's not, and I love memorial services. They're much more uplifting, in my opinion, where people stand up and they tell their funny little stories about who this person was and what they were like in life, because...
And let's be honest, the preacher stands up there, and sometimes you think, did he know this guy at all?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, and fewer of these services are even at a church facility. There's many in parks and public recreation facilities, and I'm going to be honest with you, I'm a free thinker here. I think online memorials and condolences will become the norm. There's a lot of people now that sign the guest book online. Mm-hmm. Hey, mm-hmm. We're thinking about you and sign it online. The possibilities are endless. And even if one is in a sense the pastor of an online flock, his officiating a traditional funeral is not out of the question, is it?
No, it's not.
I wonder about the deal. Is anybody Skyping weddings? Are we Skyping yet? I mean, I'm just as a pastor. Are we marrying people?
I would have to imagine that it has been
that
done.
That we're Skyping.
Hey, I would imagine, yeah.
You know, I think if somebody called me up and said, hey, Brother Allen, we want you to do the service here, and we're in California, mm-hmm. I don't know why that came to mind. That doesn't, nobody's done
it. We have ourselves live viewed weddings. We had a couple mm-hmm. of friends who got married, and we watched their wedding online.
I've actually had people Skype the ceremony mm-hmm. that I was doing to family. Okay. I'm Skype. Is that, that's not a brand name or something that I'm getting in?
It is, but it's okay.
Okay.
Everyone uses Skype. One,
now, one great advantage of the online church may be that of the expense and budget involved in a brick and mortar church would be just virtually eliminated.
Be gone.
Yes, and the constant plea for money would be eliminated with it. And we didn't talk about that topic too much, but that's a turnoff.
It is.
That constant, yes. Their church is just always, we get this ministry, that ministry, this, we need your money, bring your money, and we'll talk about that. I mean, we're going to talk about that at some further episode. Mm-hmm. We'll just get into the turnoffs of the money side, at it. Now, in our earlier episode, we talked about how many of the problems of the modern traditional church would go away with the elimination yes. of possessing and owning property and the elimination of treasury. And so that's probably going to bring the online church. I don't know how it's going to work. I mean, but I'm going to be part of it, I think. I mean, I'm just being honest with you. I'm going to jump in there and be part of it. I'm not in this for the money.
No,
I'm not in this. I've never been. You can look at my house and look at my bank account, folks. I've never been in this thing for the money. It's always been for the people. It's for the love of people, the love of God, the love of people. And that's what I'm in it for. I will say this
on it. You know, even things like this podcast that we do and the podcast that our church does, and I know a lot of other churches, but they're the ones I can speak to
right.
with some knowledge. I know. I have a really good friend, too, and Tabby's good friends with her, too, and she wouldn't mind me saying she's never attended church. She's had some really bad experiences with quote-unquote church people,
right.
And it has been great for her because she can sit down and listen to a lesson that she's interested in or listen to one of our episodes, and she feels comfortable because...
That judgment factor
yes.
isn't there.
That's yeah. it.
That fear of... I'm going to have to present myself in a certain way so that I can try to fit in. I don't want anybody to walk into the church that we attend and feel that way.
No. And let's just be really honest. that's not the place. You know how beautiful it had to be when Jesus would go out and speak, and 4,000 or 5,000 people, well, 15,000 people probably, mm-hmm. if it's 5,000 men, gather on the side of a hill.
Mm-hmm.
The wind's blowing, and it's soft breeze, and the sunny, and the kids. You think the kids are just sitting there quiet?
No.
They're off down there playing by the creek and in the hillside and all of that. How beautiful!
Yes.
How beautiful that had
Absolutely.
To be. And listen, how revolutionary that was.
Mm-hmm.
That was. There was, at that time, there was nothing that spiritual done outside the temple.
But that was a metamorphosis.
It was.
It was.
Now, I'm sure with this suggestion, there will arise a fury of anger from those whose livelihoods threatened by such an idea. But let me say, we're not going to stop the future.
No.
God's never somewhere in the past beckoning us back. He's always in the future ahead of us, beckoning us to bravely step towards Him. He's the God, the living God. He's
yes.
not the dead God back there. He's the living God. Time to conclude. We as believers are living in an exciting time. Some, if not many of us, will live to see what God has in store in the future of those who seek Him. As history has proven, those who resist the future will become relics of the past they so stubbornly try to preserve. Jesus was a futurist. He came to bring the people of His time forwards to a new concept of God and worship, one that made those who controlled the masses by their control of access to God through their position of authority over the religion of that day were becoming obsolete, are obsolete,
mm-hmm.
should be obsolete. Jesus came offering the common man access to the Father on a personal, individual basis just by believing. No pomp, no ceremony, just access to all who believed and asked. That offer He lived and died to put into effect still remains today. Man has tried hard to reinsert himself into the equation, and many through time have exposed them. The Martin Luthers, to name some, many, many like
mm-hmm.
him. I believe we are at the threshold of the next historic moment in the church, where worship will be individual, and that worship will keep us, the body, always connected by the head of the true church. Until next time, God's grace, peace, and love be on you, my fellow seekers.
Did you enjoy listening to God Beyond the Bible? Do you have an idea for an episode? Connect with us today. Visit our website at godbeyondthebible.com, all one word, or send us an email at email@godbeyondthebible.com, or you can visit us on Facebook. Just type God Beyond the Bible into the search bar.